Oh, man. We can do better than that, surely. Good morning, church.
Good morning.
Oh, man, that just sounds so much better. Now people at home think we're having a good time. Oh, it is good to be with you. I'm going to need a favor from someone. I believe I left the remote back there, right down there. If someone could bring me that, that would be fantastic. No, I didn't. Thank you, guys. Good job. You know, technology is a funny thing. I promise I did not set that up, but I was thinking about that from last week when we had some technology issues and we weren't able to live stream our services the way we like to do for people who are at home. And so I apologize for those of you who are watching online. I apologize for those difficulties last week. It was just a temporary setback, but I was thinking about we've gotten so used to being able to use all this amazing technology that when it doesn't do what we're expecting to do, it really throws us for a loop. When things don't work right, we're out of sorts. And so I was thinking for just a minute about some of the technology that has been developed even during my lifetime. For those of you who are older than me, obviously you've got even a larger spectrum. But I was thinking about some amazing technology that was developed in my lifetime. And for me, one of the biggest was the remote control. Now, for those of you who are a little bit younger than me, say 20, you may not remember what it was like before there was remote control TV viewing. But before there was remote controls, your TV viewing experience was a lot different. I specifically remember the very first TV that we owned that had a remote control and how it felt like magic. Because if you don't remember pre-remote control days, in my childhood, we had a TV that looked much like this. As a matter of fact, this might be the exact model that we had. And it was a big update because it had push buttons instead of the knob to tune to your TV station. So we thought we were high tech when we had push button TV. But before the remote control, that's what you did. We essentially had four or five channels that we could pick up with our antenna. And for the most part, I knew exactly what times the kid-friendly shows were going to be on what channels. And so I knew, at 4 o'clock to tune into the station out of Dallas because then I could watch Gilligan's Island. And I knew at, 4:30 I could tune it up. I mean, I knew all this stuff. Saturday mornings, I knew, could have told you what cartoons were on what channels at what times because that was the only time all week you ever got to watch cartoons. So every hour or half hour, you would have to dislodge from the couch, travel all the way across the living room where the TV was, and change the channel. That's the way it was. And then we got our first remote control TV, and all that changed. Suddenly, I was powerful and in charge. I could stay on my comfy couch and control the TV from all the way across the room. It was amazing. And then I remember when we got our first game console. It was an Atari 2600. And I was actually able to move things on my TV screen. I could control the TV screen. It made me feel almost famous that I was doing something on TV as a kid. Did anybody else feel that way? Yeah, it was like, I'm on TV. I am doing something on the TV. It was like amazing power right at my fingertips. Again, for those of you who have always lived in the remote control video console world, you're thinking I'm nuts, but it was a big deal at the time. And I'm sure for those of you who are older than me, you can think of innovations that when they came along, you felt that same sort of power. But one of the great truths about us as human beings is that we like to be in control of the world around us. We love being in charge and able to manipulate things in our world to suit ourselves. That is the way you and I are built by nature. the more control we have, the better, right? This is not a new phenomenon. This is not a 21st century or 20th century phenomenon. This is not something that is just tied to the United States or Western culture. This is the way it has always been for all of mankind. We've just gotten a lot better at doing it in the last 50 years or last 100 years. So here we are as a human species, right? We're in the middle of a pandemic that reveals just how little and how tenuous our grasp of control really is. And we're scrambling to find whatever means we can, as fast as we can, to regain our sense of equilibrium because we want to be in control. And even for us as Christians, as God-fearing, Bible-believing Christians, it can be really disorienting. I think that's why we are, putting billions and billions and billions, or even trillions of dollars, towards finding the quickest and easiest way to put ourselves back in the driver's seat and in charge of our world. When the Apostle Paul and his companions came into the city of Athens, Greece, they were there for the first time in Paul's missionary journeys, and they were forced to confront the same sort of mindset. Now, in a very different context, grant you, but it was the same mindset. And I think about Paul's sermon on Mars Hill, and I think in that sermon, there is some wisdom and insight that's to be found that addresses our very core desires. Now, the Athenians were a really open and remarkably curious society. They would listen to any new ideas that came along, if for no other reason than so they could argue about it and debate it and just have something to talk about. I mean, that was the way they were. It is what led to some of the greatest social innovations in the history of the world, and it is also what led to their ultimate downfall, that sometimes they were paying a little too much attention to things that didn't matter and not enough attention to things that did matter. So when they heard Paul, who comes into Athens, he's teaching new ideas, even though it's really foreign to their whole world concept, they were excited about it, or they wanted to debate about it. They definitely wanted to hear about it, and so they asked him to come speak in their most public forum, the Areopagus, the top of Mars Hill. And this is what Paul had to say. He said, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you're very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.' So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship. And this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples built by human hands. And he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. Rather, he himself gives life and breath and everything else." So in order to grasp what Paul's really saying here, you have to set the stage a little bit. Because the Athenians were so open to new ideas, there were people in Athens who worshipped every god under the sun, including the sun, and every variation of these gods that you can imagine. And there were altars and shrines and temples built all around Athens, right? Of every stripe and every color throughout the city. This is part of what's remaining of the temple to Athena. So generally speaking, their pantheon would have been Greek. Even though they were under Roman control at this time, they still had Greek culture. They still worshiped the Greek pantheon, which would have been, if you remember your elementary school education, Zeus, Hera, Poseidon, Athena. It gets real fuzzy after that for me, but that's some of the big ones. There were our main 12 gods, right? There were 12 big gods. And if you remember anything at all about Greek mythology, you know that there were way more than 12, though. So it began with these 12 main gods, and it quickly kind of spread into a whole pantheon, a slew of other lesser minor gods. All these characters and their relationships that intertwine, and there were gods in charge of every minute facet of human existence. And these gods needed to be appeased or manipulated in some way or shape or form or fashion. In their religious world, it was their job to be a worshiper, as a worshiper, to give these gods what they needed, what they required, so that the gods would be happy and hopefully would stop them from wreaking too much havoc in your life. That was what you did as a worshiper. You sort of paid gods off. Give them what they need so they don't destroy your life. So sacrifices had to be made. Not because making sacrifices was good for you, but because the gods depended on these sacrifices by human beings in order to exist. They had to have the attention, and they had to have the devotion. They had to have the sacrifices. But what if you forgot one of the gods? I mean, what if you failed to appease a god that you simply didn't know existed at this point? What if there were other gods you didn't know about? So they built this altar that was kind of a catch-all. The altar to the unknown god, just in case we might have missed one, right? And that was their way of thinking. So Paul seizes upon their admitted ignorance that they don't know about all the gods, and he points out a flaw in their idolatrous thinking. Now, this sounds crazy to you and I. This sounds crazy to have all these different temples and all these different shrines, to make all these different sacrifices and all these different prayers to all these different gods, and just to feel like you have some measure of control over the world. That sounds nutso to you and me. But honestly, that's the way we like it. We like thinking we can manipulate everything to suit ourselves, even God. We like the idea of a God that's small enough for us to control him, for us to make an idol out of him, so to speak, to make a way for us to be in charge, even of God, to do something for him and make him do something good for us, or at least prevent him from doing bad stuff to us. We like the idea of some way having some sort of remote control over God. Now, we're too smart and we're too modern to think of it in terms of an actual physical idol. But we've set up these little shrines nonetheless. We have shrines dedicated to health, where if you follow a certain lifestyle, then you shouldn't get sick or injured or have the health problems that other people have. And if you'll just do this, then you will get healthy or you will stay healthy. All you have to do is follow this pattern of sacrifice, and it largely involves sacrificing sugar and butter, right? Or your energy or your time. If you'll just make these sacrifices, then you will be healthy and stay healthy. We have shrines dedicated to labor, where if you work hard enough, you'll become financially successful and never struggle to make ends meet. And if you'll just do this, you'll get ahead in life and you won't have to ever depend on anyone else for help. And companies and corporations and businesses and people, they know about our little shrines and they feed upon them. So if you'll just buy this product, your life will be easier. Your family will be safer. Your life will be less complicated in some way, because our tiny shrines and our tiny gods betray us. So what the Apostle Paul tells the Athenians is that if you can control your God in any way, if you have any say-so over what your God does, then your God is too small. If your God needs something from you, your God is too small. If you can manipulate your gods to get what you want from them, your God is too small. If you can pray a certain prayer or do a certain thing to ensure your financial or emotional or physical or professional success, your God is too small. Because the real God, Paul said, the unknown God you declared, is bigger than that. So big that he needs nothing from you. The God who made the world and everything in it doesn't need your financial donations. The God who existed before time began doesn't need your 1 hour per week. The God who moves the air in your lungs and the blood through your veins doesn't need you to do or say anything for him. Our God needs nothing. And he therefore cannot be controlled. The amazing thing about our God is that he chooses to interact with us at all. That he loves us enough to hold us accountable and will do so throughout life and ultimately at a day of judgment that Paul talks about to the Athenians. And that he is so dedicated to us, the opposite of the way the Athenians thought. That our God is so dedicated to us that he made the sacrifice for us. He doesn't need our sacrifices. We need his sacrifices. He doesn't need us, but we desperately need him. Our God is that big, that different than every other tiny God you can fashion in your life. Now, this is not an argument against eating healthy or exercising. It's not an argument against working hard or studying hard if you're in school. This is not an argument to just say, just throw your hands up and whatever happens, happens. That is not the way the Apostle Paul lived. That's not the way Jesus lived. That's not the way the early Christians lived. This is not a throw caution to the wind, just, you know, well, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die. I might as well be doing 95 without a seatbelt in a T-top. You know, I mean, this is not one of those things. You still use some sanity and common sense that God gave us. But at the same time, we realize that we're not the ones in control of everything that happens to us. You know, it probably wouldn't hurt to cut a little bit of sugar and a little bit of butter. It wouldn't hurt me a little bit to get out and exercise. Probably wouldn't hurt me to work a little harder, study a little more. All those things can be beneficial. But you know what? Some people who don't eat sugar and butter still have heart problems. And some people who exercise really diligently still get injured. And some people who work really hard are always financially struggling. Some people who are really smart just can't seem to get a break. Some people who have all the breaks still seem to struggle. Because we cannot control our God the way the Greeks thought that they can control their God. And this morning, I want to invite you and encourage you, the way the Apostle Paul did, this morning to lay aside our tiny gods and open ourselves up to this unknown God, to the God who made the heavens and the earth and everything in it, to the God who is in control of your very physical body in a physical world and in control of your very spiritual core in the realm beyond. This morning, if we can help you in laying aside your idols and taking up the mantle of this God through whom we serve in Jesus Christ, we want you to encourage you to seek out our elders this morning after our services and speak with them, talk with them. If you need prayers, if you need encouragement, if there's any way we can help you, we want to encourage you to do that. And now, Tommy was going to lead us in a song. Let's stand and let's sing.